Hello, welcome back to the Chronic Command. This is Josh, your host, and thank you again for tuning in to another episode, a cracking one with Terrace Cassidy from Geek Nation Tours. And yeah, Terrace has been somebody I had listened to way back on the D6 generation and Meeples and Miniatures. He did an epic show there with Mike, the great late Mike Hobbs as well. And I really wanted to get him on because I know he takes frequent trips to Japan every year, taking people over to walk the battlefields or to visit certain locations and places in Japan and other places around the world as well that has sort of relevance to geek culture or historical battlefields or whatever it might be. And I know that Terrace really liked Epic Space Marine as well, so I really wanted to invoke some nostalgic memories from Terrace about his days playing Epic Space Marine. And I hope you really enjoyed this interview. I really enjoyed talking to Terrace, and I hope to bring him back to go through his first White Dwarf magazines at some time in the future. And I just wanted to send out an apology. I don't know if anybody has looked on my YouTube channel or through Patreon for my patrons. It's a public post anyway. You can listen to that. But basically just an apology to say that the last three podcasts that I did, and it's mainly apology to you, the listeners, and to the guests that came on, the audio quality wasn't really good at all. And it was just me experimenting with recording through Discord, and I didn't really know how or what I was doing that it, you know, the reasons why the quality was bad. It was that I didn't realize that the sound was recording through the speakers of my PC rather than it recording internally through a channel through GarageBand, which is the program I was recording it on. So I want to say apology to you guys, the listeners, and to the guests that came on in the last three podcasts for that. And now I've resorted back to Zoom, which I'm recording with Terrace on today, which means that we've got a much more stable audio connection here, and it's just an overall better experience for the listener, as I'm sure you'll be sitting there painting your models or in the car commuting or whatever you do when you listen to the Chronic Command. And because it's a big responsibility for me, because yeah, there are a lot of people downloading, listening to the Chronic Command, which is really incredible to me. When I look at some of the stats just for Spotify, it's quite a lot of downloads, and that's not taking into account for all the other applications like Apple Podcasts and that kind of thing, which take up the lion's share of the listenership of the podcast. So, yeah, big thank you to you out there who are downloading and listening and enjoying each show. And I hope to bring more and more interviews to you with these amazing people in our community out there with their stories to share. And I get to meet them and learn about their experiences, and you do too, which is wonderful. So we have that, and I hope I have an update for the Call of the Crown with our friend GJ over in the Forces of Fantasy podcast. If you haven't checked out the Forces of Fantasy podcast, I urge you to do it. GJ is, of course, the voice of the War Games Orchard, and as that sort of dissolved, GJ went onto his own podcast and formed it himself and has his own YouTube channel now and also a Patreon, which I follow to get the bonus content, videos and audio and that kind of thing as well. And GJ does a great job in serving the community for things like first edition, second edition Warhammer that he's currently reviewing in his podcast shows and videos, and doing 5th edition battle reports. So I really want to encourage GJ along there. And he's also running, I'm not doing much about running the painting challenge, but this year he really wanted to do the Call of the Crown 3. So that's really wonderful, that and seeing the results of people submitting their entries for that, which is awesome to see from the community. People getting involved and painting their miniatures and cutting through that lead pile, and hopefully playing some games with those miniatures once they're finished. So they're really the brief sort of things I wanted to touch on before we get to the interview with Terrace. But also in just final thoughts, I did also post a poll on my YouTube channel talking about the content that will be coming probably, you know, soon, as in changes that might happen in terms of battle reports and the length of videos, the type of content that will be coming, and in the form that will be coming in. I have to reform it a little bit because of time restraints, because, you know, if you think about a game that might take 4 hours on average, so maybe that's 3 hours of footage, then I've got to go through and edit that. That's another 3 to 4 to 5 hours of editing, because you need to watch everything and then cut out things, or, you know, add screen titles, all that kind of stuff that takes up a lot of time, which I don't really have at this stage, which is crazy because you think that I'm working from home now. I'm painting as a commission painter for Everyland Studios, which is wonderful. It's my dream job. But, of course, that takes up a lot of my time during the day. And then editing is kind of reserved for the free time that I have. And, of course, that chews into my family time. So I've got to make a balance between how many hours I can dedicate to, you know, doing a battle report. How many, and if it's just a small video, which I'm doing more and more these days, very small, light videos, which seem to be popular, which is good. People seem to interact more with those. Which is nice to hear, because it's about certain publications like a catalog, Introduction to Games Workshop, one of the books that I'm, you know, reviewing or something on the channel. And it sort of evokes more of a response from people, which is nice. I like to hear, you know, and communicate with people on YouTube, because it's one of the primary sources of, you know, getting correspondence with my listenership and viewership on there. And it's always nice to hear people's stories about how they got into Games Workshop, or their reflections on one of the publications I'm viewing on the channel. So that's basically a roundup. My good friend Carnifex in Sydney isn't with me today, but we are talking about coming back with a big community show and going through all of that. So maybe GJ's segment will be in there. I'm not really sure as yet. So if it doesn't happen at the end, I'm really sorry, GJ, but we'll include it at some point. And getting, yeah, things back on track, basically, and finding a good balance between, yeah, the time I spend editing and recording and filming and all that kind of thing, and still having time for family time, and still having time to do my regular day job. So, guys, thanks for hanging in there with us, and I really appreciate your support, your comments, your feedback. That's really important. The feedback's really essential to know how things are going, because in some cases I don't hear anything and you're sort of just speaking to a void, and you don't know what, if you're doing things right, if you're not doing things right. So, yeah, if you need to let me know and correspond with me, you can always contact me at thecrownofcommandpodcast@gmail.com or at ebbyled@gmail.com. The two ways of getting in touch with me, or through our Discord, and the links of those will be in the show notes. And I'll also include the link for Terrace's Geek Nation tours in there as well. It's something you should go and check out. If you're thinking about going on a geek tour, then Terrace has that all sorted for you. He's a professional. He's been in the business now for 13 years doing this. And I really hope you enjoy this interview, especially if you like Epic Space Marine. You're going to absolutely love it, because we're going to talk a lot about that. Okay, guys, well, without further ado, I'll let you go into the interview and enjoy, and take care. See you again next time. Thanks again, mate, for coming on to the Crown of Command podcast. You're a voice that maybe some people might remember from the D6 generation, because you were quite prolific on there. You came on several times as like a third chair, or talking about your Geek Nation tours and things you were doing actively, taking people around the world in search of geekdom, whether it be the UK or Japan, all over the world. So it's an amazing kind of business you started doing that. And I thought I'd bring you on because I know you love Epic Space Marine, and it's a game close to my heart. But as I can see in the background, you're heavily involved with many other projects as well, and it's in quite a credible gaming room you got there.
Yeah, thank you. That's Ghostwreck of Helico right there. And Frostgrave there, and there's a whole bunch of 40k stuff back there, and of course some Epic stuff.
Wow, mate, that's like it's almost like a museum or game store you've got there, basically. Like, it's nothing compared to my little small the four-cornered little space in my house in Japan here. It's tiny.
Yeah. Oh, wow, Japan. It's almost impossible in Japan. Yeah. I lived for a while, by the way.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Where are you at?
I'm in Mito, Ibaraki Prefecture. So it's about 100 clicks north of northeast of Tokyo.
Okay. I lived in Aomori, so I lived in northern
Japan. Wow. That's more, almost like Canada then, mate. So freezing cold. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I actually did a summer session in Sapporo, so it's even further.
Wow.
University I went to.
In Hokkaido. Yeah, nice.
Hokudai is where I
spent. Hokudai. Okay.
Yeah, I loved it there. Yeah,
yeah, that's wonderful.
Got a really good place in my heart. I love going back. So I love going there. So
excellent. Awesome. That's good, mate.
Yeah.
So how did all this start, Terrace? How did, like, in terms of like gaming, like, if you, and you're from Canada, I take it, yeah? You've always, yeah, born and bred in Canada. How did your gaming sort of career sort of blossom, mate?
Sure. I think it started with my interest in Dungeons and Dragons. When I was young, I got the Dungeons and Dragons, the Monster Manual, and I brought it home. I was really into monsters back there, 11 years old. So I was just into monsters of any sort, Greek mythology, that kind of thing. And I brought it home and I realized it was a game. I had no idea when I bought it that it was a game. I thought it was more of a, just a kind of a thing, a description of monsters. And I was like, wait, you can play in this world? And then from there, that's how I got into role-playing. And then from role-playing, I did miniatures for role-playing. And then a friend of mine in university actually introduced me into Epic. So Epic was my first foray into miniature wargaming.
Wow, that's quite unusual. I don't think many people could say that, really.
Yeah. I'm one of the few. Epic was, I think, really... I had some 40K miniatures back in the day, but we never really played. I played a little bit of Rogue Trader. But that actually I paid Rogue Trader after I played Epic. Yeah. So I played Epic. Then I moved to Vancouver and I basically was living at the GW store on Water Street in Vancouver and playing Epic every once in a while. So yeah, some cool stories.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you started playing, was it Space Marine or Epic Space Marine? Like the
it would have been
first edition or second edition?
Yeah, it would have been Space Marine. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So with the foam buildings and the old warlords and the whole bit. Yeah. So yeah, it started with just like it is now with GW, Legion on Legion. So
that's right. Just, yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice to see GW going back and doing it over again. It's because I'm actually quite excited about it. I've been doing, as I said, I'm doing Frostgrave for a long time, skirmish stuff for probably 10 years or so, seven anyway, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I really transitioned kind of out of 40K into a skirmish. It just became a little bit too much game for me. I spent a lot of time with 40K and I loved my stint with 40K, but I think it was becoming too much for me. And so I transitioned into skirmish games and Frostgrave in particular. And it'll be good to get back into a GW game actually. So,
yeah, I think I bought something from GW for the first time in I think about 25 years. And that was the Rogue Trader print on demand copy, mate.
Oh, so really?
First thing I got excited about.
That's cool. That's, you know, that Rogue Trader is, we played it for hours, like so many. I remember some really good, awesome times playing Rogue Trader, and but with never getting a resolution, never finishing a game. I don't think I finished one game of Rogue Trader because it was so complex and hard, and you know, everybody's got their own individual weapons, and yeah, I mean, it was good. It was good times, but I don't think I ever finished a game of Rogue Trader. Just an afternoon. I finished an afternoon of Rogue Trader, but not a game of Rogue Trader.
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking through one of the orc books, I think it's the Here We Go book with the Goth list in it. It's got like under Goths like the boys, it's got like you can upgrade to Scar Boys, and each Scar Boy can have one of their characteristics up by one. And you can either do for all of the Scar Boys, and I think you only have about three or four or whatever, but each one can have a different characteristic upgraded. So you'd have to write on the bases or something to say, you know, like weapon skill plus one, BS plus one.
It's impossible. I have the Freebooters book.
It's a classic one. Yeah, Freebooters one. Great.
I didn't, but I played Eldar back then. Like, that's how was my shtick. So even when they had the Harlequins back in the day, I think that might have been my first box set that I bought from GW.
Mm.
The old metal Harlequins back in the day.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, those times were great too. The amount of cool miniatures, and then you know the toilet paper. toilet
paper. Not so great, yeah.
You know, just a classic time and hobby.
The silos, the Kleenex silos on the table. The
Kleenex silos and everything. Yeah, it's a great time.
You get the toilet paper as like tarps or something to put over top of them.
And the roll, right? That's how you get the roller is the toilet paper. Those were really awesome times. And all those kits, like the Space Marine, the first Space Marine plastic kit, I remember we were so excited to get that.
Mm.
But if you look back on it now, it's like, wow, that was comparatively, like back in the day, it was awesome.
Mm.
But comparatively now, you're like, wow, this is not the same Space Marine as this one. So it's a cool thing to be kind of part of history in that whole thing. It was a cool time to be there. Yeah. But it was funny because I got a great, what were we playing? We were playing Epic, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we were playing Epic at the GW store on Water Street in Vancouver, which is basically downtown. I don't know if you've ever been there, but there's this kind of old style cobblestone road right in downtown. Cool steam clocks and just a really kind of a hip area, cool area. And that's where the GW store used to be.
Mm.
So we were there hanging out at night, and we would play games with the manager late into night. And, you know, we'd close the doors and we would game. And it was dark out, and it was late, and the door kind of jingled, and we're like, oh no, someone's coming in. We forgot to lock the door. And Robin Williams and Kirsten Dunst walk in, and we're like, he says,
wow,
can I come in and play? Can I hang out?
Like a movie set.
Yeah, it was really cool. So they were filming Jumanji, I believe. So it's been a while about that. And then they walked in and he was like, yeah, those are so cool. And he was starting to make, you know, machine gun noises.
Brilliant.
Yeah, explosions. And we're like, what the heck is going on here? You know, and Kirsten, she was probably, I don't know, 12 at the time. She was like, what is Robin doing? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it was her mom or handler or maid or whatever. And so he hang out for about 20 minutes and then he just left.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the good old late Robin Williams. Yeah. Now, he was a gamer himself, wasn't he? He played a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's why he wanted to come in to hang out with.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was a good fun. So that was also kind of back in the day. I think that was after I came back from Japan the first time. So 91, 92, 93, somewhere around there.
What took you to Japan, mate? What was the reason why you went over there?
I've always been interested in Japanese culture. So always from Wolverine, Frank Miller's Wolverine, to Shogun from Gavel, and then into Zen Buddhism. And my university degree is East Asian Studies, focusing on feudal Japan and Japanese religion. And
Great.
Yeah. And so I did a stint at a summer session in Hokkaido University, and then I went back and taught. And then I've been back like a lot, probably 6-7 times.
Yeah.
And you, why are you there? Is that a big story?
For the women, the food, and the booze.
Okay, that's cool. Completely, yes. Yeah, I understand.
I met my wife and I came over. We decided, she wanted to come to Australia. And I thought, well, I've just been living in Australia for 30-odd years. I want to come to Japan and live here for a while. So we decided to live here. And then, 10 years later, we're still here. So,
it's wonderful.
It's a great place. Yeah, it's very quiet. If you're looking for a very quiet sort of, environment, where I am, it's out in the sticks kind of thing. But it's an exciting place, especially for young people. If I discovered Japan when I was like 20, I would have stayed here since then. I think I don't think I would have gone anywhere else. I would have completely fell in love with the place and stayed here long term.
Absolutely. I mean, even back in the day when I first went there, that would have been in 1990, and Tokyo. The Olympics had just been, I don't know when the Olympics actually were, but Tokyo had been completely revitalized from the Olympics. And it was like, it was like landing in Blade Runner back in the day. It was like, oh my God, it is so futuristic here. The motorcycles and Akihabara and everything like that. But I don't think it's actually, for young people, I don't think it's actually kind of come down. Its high is still there. Like if you go to Studio Ghibli or Akihabara, still is an awesome place to go to. And so many other places in Japan that are just so cool.
Yeah. You got your cultural interests. If you want to go there, culturally look at traditional stuff, historic stuff, which I love doing. I love going to the old shrines and that kind of thing. I feel really at peace in those places. I just think, they're really sort of mystical places. Even the one just down the road here, my local one, it's like you're just surrounded by these huge cedar trees and you're in the presence of this building that's been standing there for like 2,000 years, which I'm just in awe of, like just looking at the discoloration on the roof tiles, everything about it. It's like you're just stepping into you're stepping in back in time kind of thing. And I love that presence those places have. It's something, it's really sort of untouched kind of thing and part of their history, which is lovely. We don't have anything like that in Australia.
Same with Canada, and I agree. It's that those places, just like the spirits there, right? And they know how to not capture the spirit, because that implies that something's captured, but to maybe focus the spirit, like that air, that or places mean something in Japan, And what's amazing about that is that you can do the same thing in Tokyo. Like you can go to a Shinto shrine or a Buddhist temple in Tokyo and you walk off of the busy, super hyper busy streets and into one of these shrines and it changes everything. Like it's like you're not even in a city anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you might even feel like you're in fall. Like I remember walking into a Shinto shrine in Japan and all the leaves were manicured to look like they were in fall, but it was summer. And I swear the temperature went down like 12 degrees when I walked into this place, because it just had that vibe, that really cool history, but also just this power.
I think people have to experience it. I think everybody who's come to Japan that I've known have really enjoyed it and come away feeling that they've had a really good experience. Like it is a different culture. It is a different, different place you're stepping into. It's not like anything you're familiar with. So I think that's why people fall in love with it. And they want to keep coming back like yourself.
Yep.
So that's great. Yeah.
There's
come and visit me next time, mate. Come and visit me in Ibaraki next time.
Yeah. Okay. I will. Well, I'm actually going to be in Tokyo in April.
Right.
So maybe I will come and visit.
Ooh,
I
don't know. Sounds good. We'll play some Epic Space Marine, mate.
Yeah, that's right. That would be epic if we played Epic. But sorry, we are getting back. We totally, if there was a...
Oh, that's good.
Whatever,
that's right.
I'm blessed that not everybody has a game room like this in Canada. So we do have a lots of space though. So there is a lot of places that have gaming space in their own homes.
Yeah.
So this is like I said, I'm blessed. I love it, and my wife is very kind to me. So
yeah, mine too, mate. Mine too. She gave me this room. It was her blessing for me. Have my own man cave I can run away and hide into.
Nice.
And along into the night.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's good, eh, mate? Yeah, so that's great. Yeah. So you're still actively involved in the hobby, which is great. It sort of was something that you picked up, you know, way back in the day, and then you sort of left and came back to it. So that you always seem to be actively involved in the hobby in some sense, either through physically, you know, playing games or taking people on these trips through Geek Nation tours. How did that all start, mate?
Geek Nation tours, the 2009 recession, I had two travel agencies. So I was taking holidays. I wasn't working anymore. I was letting my staff work. And then the recession hit really bad. And of course, no one's traveling during a recession. So I asked my staff if they wanted to work the summer or to have it off without pay. And they, to my chagrin, said, we'll have it off without pay. So that means that I had to work it. So in the summer in the travel agency, in summer, there's nothing going on. In Canada, there's nothing going on mostly anyway. And then in a summer in a recession, there's even less going on. So I started to read Donald Featherstone books.
No.
And just because I wanted to read about game design and how to do things and how the beginning of wargaming started. So I was just buying his books left, right, and center. And I wasn't even looking up what the titles were, let alone what was inside them. So I even bought one of his physiotherapy books, how to dance safely or something like that. He was a physiotherapist, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he was, isn't he? For a football club, I think. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He actually helped people dance ballet.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, that was cool. One of the books that came across my desk was the Battlefield Walker's Handbook. So I started to read that, and I was looking for something new to do because I had already had this travel agency that is, you know, fairly successful, and I started to look elsewhere. But also now there was a huge downturn, and I was like, what am I going to do? And so I read this book, and I'm like, wow, I could do Battlefield tours anywhere in the world. And then I was driving around, you know, thinking about how I could do that, and listening to 40K radio. And I'm like, oh my God, I can do nerd tours. And then from there, it was like, I could do a Star Trek tour. I could do a whatever tour. I can do a tour to Japan for anime. I can do a tour to Japan for Battlefields. So it just was a cascade of all that. So it all came from wargaming, actually.
Wow, that's great, mate.
Yeah.
And it's been, you start, I don't know exactly when did you start this?
So it would have
2009, been was it 2010?
2009, I started to solidify that. And so 2010, I think, was my first tour.
So 23 years later, you're still going, mate.
Yeah.
13 years,
yes. Don't take 10 years away from me.
So, 13 years later, you're still going. And I sort of learned about you through the D6 generation with Russ, Craig, and all that. So, you came on sometimes to talk about that and the tool you're taking. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And as a matter of fact, I'm still working with Craig. When we're in the background, I have my Gettysburg tour. So I'm the Battlefield Handbook. I'm doing my Battlefield tour of Gettysburg and the American Civil War.
Right.
So, exciting stuff. So very happy about that.
Mm.
And And so he's going to be running that one for me this summer. So yeah, we're still talking. There's lots of, you know, you make a lot of different connections. Like I was hanging out with John Stollart this last summer because I did my miniatures in the UK tour.
Mm-hmm.
I was hanging out with Andy Chambers and the Perry twins and, you know, just all those old GW guys. That's what we do. We go to the trip to Jerusalem and have a few drinks. And yeah. So, it's funny, you become friends with these guys after a while. And I remember the first time I met Rick Priestley, I was just a mess. Like, I was like, how do I talk to this guy?
Yeah.
He later, I told him that story later, you know, a couple of years later. And he goes, you know, you should have just told me, hey, we should go out for a beer. And I'm like, of course, that would have been great if I would have known
that.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's kind of strange to be, you know, all these places have taken me to cool. And I've obviously I bring my tour group there and to meet all these people. And that's one of the reasons I have this connection. But just to hang with them in a pub and just to BS with them and know that they're human too. But yeah, it's kind of cool that this company has gotten me a lot of amazing friends.
Yeah, mate, that's wonderful, isn't it?
so, all those cool GW times and all those cool old games that we used to play really influenced Geek Nation tours. I think the internet, obviously the internet did too. When I came back, I moved from Vancouver to where I'm living now, Hinton, Alberta. So it's just a small town in the middle of the Rockies or just outside of the Rockies. And, at that time there was a transition between, Epic, Armageddon was going on then. And you know that it kind of fell off, fell apart after a while. And there was a lot of us in the community that weren't really wanted to continue with old Epic. So I was part of the Net Epic crew to help rebuild Epic from scratch and kind of revitalize the rules. So that was when the internet was really young. So I was amazed that I had friends, you know, all through the United States and in Turkey and in England, and we were just, you know, banding together to make this cool new version of Epic. So that was when I think my love of the internet really kind of started off too, and how it can be a force for community. And really that's kind of what I've tried to make Geek Nation Tours to be, is this force for community. The internet can be kind of at odds with that, obviously, but if we use it right, it can be really build our community, even though we might not have people really close to us. So I've got a good friend that we game regularly, a few guys that we had used to game, but they've kind of moved on. And so we don't always have that community right really close to us. And so not only has the internet provided me that, but Geek Nation Tours has provided me that too, because I try to create a mini community wherever we go. So on our Star Trek tour, for instance, everybody knows the jokes. Everybody is like, oh, I remember that episode, or can kind of there's a common vocabulary, right? Mm. And so same with wargaming. When I go to the Adepticon tour, everybody just loves what they're doing, and they just want to hang out and express their joy of miniature wargaming or painting or hobbying or whatever. So I think that I kind of lucked out that I can create a hobby, a community within a community. So really that's what we do. I've got people that on my first tour, my first Nottingham tour, as a matter of fact, that was almost 10 years ago. Well, it was it was 10 years ago, over 10 years ago now. And they hang out on family holidays together. They go to each other's, they've went to each other's weddings.
Oh, so, wow.
So that kind of bond is really what I'm trying to do with GNT.
Yeah. Wonderful, mate. And we can segue into NetApp because I know that's how I sort of discovered you as well through the community, through the Meeples and Miniatures podcast with Mike Hobbs, the big special.
That was
that was a fun one. I like that with Ken Whitehurst and
absolutely.
And the other gentleman there, I forget his name, but he's basically the main guy behind everything behind NetApp. Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that and the community you build up online, and it sort of helped you form this relationship with people around the world. And of course, then you can tie that into your Geek Nation tours and sort of visit these people, places, and that kind of thing that you form these relationships with. That's really good. How often does NetApp get onto the table, mate?
Not very often. It did back in the day. I think that there was a time when I kind of transitioned away from wargaming. It was probably only about 2 years. I played Blood Bowl when I was in Japan, actually. That's really fun. Right. So when I went to Japan, I found, Dungeon Bowl. I had played Blood Bowl, but then I played Dungeon Bowl when I was in Japan. So even in Japan, I was still wargaming. Not as much or frequently as before. But then when I moved here, I was so busy with my business and establishing my family that there's probably about 2 years that I didn't kind of wargame. And that, at least a year anyway. And that time was when I left the crew at NetEpic and kind of just didn't do anything. And then I transitioned to 40K. So, So NetEpic, although I was really interested in rule building, I didn't play it as much as I should have probably, but I didn't have the chance to play it at that time because at that time I had moved here and my only source of wargaming was NetEpic, building NetEpic, because I didn't have anyone here that played 40K or played wargaming. So that when I was building NetEpic, that was actually my only source of wargaming
contact. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I can understand it. That's why I thought it's interesting that your first kind of miniature game was apart from the role playing, but the real miniature tabletop gaming was Epic. And it's kind of not the first game that people mostly play. We got into it because it was cheap to get into, because playing Warhammer, Fantasy Battle, 3rd edition, or Rogue Trader was just too expensive for us, and the models are just too hard to get. But Epic, you could buy everything in a box, and everything came in one big set. And it just happened to be that the rules were so fun to play as well that it just became this amazing game.
It's an amazing game. And so what did you play? What did you play? Did you play like Space Marine? Where did you enter the
second edition? The big blue box when it came with all the same like Space Marine, but it just came with everything, the Titan and all the three different factions. And
that was the time to be in. I mean, Space Marine was okay, but really second was really when it kind of turned on. And as a game, I think it's to this day their best, honestly.
Yeah.
Like just the command and control. It's funny because I talked to Andy about this, and he believes that it's his best game. Also, he did. I don't know if that's still the case. He probably, his new stuff is even better. But check out Blood Red Skies by Andy. I think there's a good place in his heart for Epic, and I think that it is one of GW's best all-time games. The command and control method, the way you move miniatures across the table, it actually feels, and this sounds terrible, but it feels epic. It does feel like it's this amazingly huge battle that you would get in a novel from a 40K novel. Just the immensity of it is there, you know.
Yeah.
As soon as, and it's not like the Titans take it over. It's important to have a Titan, you know, but it's really well balanced, and all the different, I mean, all the different armies they had. I can only imagine how hard that would have been to balance. Like, it's just unbelievable. And I never felt that one faction was like powered over another faction. I felt that there was always a chance to win and everything. Mm. There was no creep back in those days, you know, and it just is, you know, it's a wonderful game. And I was really happy to see that they're kind of going back to a lot of that, a lot of those rules in Legions. So that's part of the reason I'm excited about it. You know, you see those command tokens and you're like, wow, that's kind of bringing it old school for sure.
Yeah. Yep, I think so too. Yeah, I'm happy for people to now re-enter the hobby or find Epic in a new form, and it's going to be supported, and you know, they've got a new community doing that, which is great. So people who missed out on it before and found it too prohibitive to get back into it, or didn't find an active community, well, now they've got that, which is excellent. And and if it's not going to be Games Workshop figures, well, there's a whole range of other companies who make wonderful epic scale models that will suit perfectly. And then they've got various different systems. It's a bit like historical gaming. You could just say, okay, I'll play that rule system, or I'll play this one, or
well, NetEpic's still there, and
yeah, exactly, mate, exactly, yeah,
and there's a whole bunch of miniatures, old miniatures, you can still play by, and I'm sure you can get those via eBay or wherever too. So
yeah
for sure, yeah. It's just I'm glad that the game still is going to exist again in a form that's kind of supported by them, but also I'm a big proponent of the game anyway. I've played it at Adepticon a couple times, by the way, so that's really nice. One of my two guys, you know, on my miniatures in the UK tour brought their Epic and they played it at Warhammer.
Oh, cool.
I think some of the game designers came down and watched, actually.
Oh, like, brilliant.
Why are they playing? Because it was a week before they released Legions. So they were like, what's this? And then the day that we were leaving to go back home, they released Legions. So we're like, oh my God.
Wow.
You guys were just playing this.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's definitely a beautiful thing. So I definitely have a good relationship with that. I think they do have a hard time balancing things and making things new. So I do think that Epic will give a lot of players a, because it won't be 40K. Just like, I don't know, have you played Titanicus?
I've never played it. I've never played the original one, never played the new one. And I mean, to be honest, I would like to play the original one, just because I like the scale. Like, it's basically just the Beetleback Titans, and you got the cool styrofoam terrain and everything. And I love the artwork and all that kind of stuff. But I heard that the new ones are equally as good, and it's just in a different scale with different models, and it's a very much higher price point. So it's just...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And and like the Warlord Titan, I don't want to build another Warlord Titan. It was a thing of joy.
I would say... But the original ones are brilliant, mate. It's like five parts. That's it, done.
Exactly. And that Warlord Titan almost killed me. I'm like, one more part. It was a crucible for sure. Yeah. But it's a good game. It was fun. And the reason why I brought it up at all is that too is not a regular GW game. Like, it doesn't flow like Age of Sigmar or 40K or Heresy. It just is this kind of a cool mechanisms that feel kind of apart from regular GW gaming. And an amazing system. So that gives me a lot of hope for the new game that it will also be kind of apart from. Well, again, we saw already that they have the command and control type of stuff, and so we know that it's not going to be the same as 40K anyway. So,
yeah.
So that is that gives me a lot of hope, simply because, again, when we were working on NetEpic, that was an amazing time to revitalize that the game that we loved. And I think that a lot of people just loved how it
flowed. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a really cool time. Like I said, it's funny that you twigged that memory, because I hadn't really thought of it as being my my only outlet for war games for a little while when I wasn't playing. So with that said, I mean, I played a lot of those games. Like, we would probably game at least twice a week, once a week.
Nice. Yeah.
So when I was living in Vancouver, we gamed a lot, and it was was the only game that we played. Like, we had no interest in 40K and no interest in Rogue Trader after our debacling trying to get through a game, but several games. But yeah, it was a really good time. So I have really good memories of that. And NetEpic was great too, because it was the first time that I had an internet community. And I remember there was just like recently there was a big earthquake in Turkey, and I contacted him, and you know what? I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but and he was like, "No, we're okay." And so it was a strange time, because everything is so connected now. But you got to remember that during the '90s, there was nothing like it is now. Like,
that's right. I mean,
yeah. It wasn't. You had no idea what was going on the other side. There was news and everything, you know, but you didn't have the communication lines. I mean, when I was in Japan, I used to send letters to my...
Right, yeah. Me too. When I lived in the UK, I did the same. Because there's no internet, there's no way of connecting. You had to call them, and calling was very expensive. So just a handwritten letter was the way you could send.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you think about that and how time is... You know, we live kind of through history in a lot of ways. And we were in the generation that wrote letters, and I don't think you'll ever see that again. There's, you know, outliers that still write letters and everything for sure.
Yeah.
And that's cool. That's a cool hobby to have, or a cool thing to do. Even a postcard. Like, when was the last time you got a postcard? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, actually, I live in Japan, so you dig a lot of postcards.
Okay. That's true.
The first day of the year, or like celebrate the new year, you get a ton of them in the mailbox, and you have to send it to
one place. I love that paper. You're right, because I still get postcards from Japan, so that's true.
If you want,
I don't write them.
I don't write them either. But if you want to come to the stationery capital of the world, Japan,
Japan
would be the first place to go to. So if you love your stationery, then Japan is the place. You should do a stationary tour.
People might get the wrong place. Like, that does that mean that we stay in only one part? That's a great. I should, you know, because I bet you there's a lot of geeks out there that would love that kind of thing. Because the stationary stores in Japan are wonderful.
Well, I'm thinking for girls too, because I love, you know, colored paper, all the kinds of different kinds of notebooks and pens, and there's so many things you can buy in Japan for that kind of stuff, that kind of thing related to it. And they would love that. So I think for women and for girls, I would love all that kind of stuff, you know, and getting their Hello Kitty pen and their
Mickey
notepad or something like that.
Absolutely.
Mate, there's a market for everybody, really, isn't there? But
there is. That's what basically we're at, is that we do try to have an outlandish tour every once in a while that is like a bowling tour or you know, whatever, something kind of weird or different. But talking about NetEpic, that whole trying to get our our community together, and having that first time to have a community, online community, was really special. And the fact that that community happened to be Wargaming, it's really strange that, or really cool that my Wargaming has led into so many different things in my life. So
yeah,
it's a huge part of who I am. But you can't see it. My painting table is just over there. And I actually need to go to that place every once in a while. My wife is like, okay, you need to go paint. You can just go and paint. And honestly, I do. I need to just kind of zen out and listen to a book or some music.
That's what it's about, isn't it? Like you talked about Buddhism before and that kind of thing. Like that is kind of a type of meditation, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
Definitely not putting together a Warlord Titan in the new age.
No, that would not be.
That's hell. It's like a melt and burn project, that one. Take it to back and
why
down
is it so many fuel parts? And it up. Why are there so many parts? It is a place to meditate, and it's a place to kind of get your head on straight and to just be calm. And I think that calming space is really needed for me personally. That's, you know, when your table becomes, be really careful on a lot of things. I think for me, I have to be really careful. Like, first, I would never start a painting service. Like, I would never do that because not because of deadlines and all that, because I'm pretty good at deadlines. But I think that when you change your table from a meditative place to a workplace, I think that would be really devastating for me. But also, what's also really important is that the table can't become a sweat house.
Sweatshop.
Sweatshop.
It's funny you should say that. I actually do that for a living. I paint for a living.
Do you?
Yeah. Do you do that for a living? I do, yeah, for a living.
Yeah, well, I have lots of friends. Oh, that's good. Maybe I'll keep you in mind for some opportunities.
Yeah. Epic Warlord Titans, maybe. Yeah.
That's right. I will send you those. Next time I have to build one, I'll send them to you. For me, I'm like I said, I know a lot of people that do that, but I can never do that. But I mean something different when I say a sweatshop. Because what was happening to me when I was playing 40K was that I was painting for my gaming table, and I wasn't painting for me. And I think that started me thinking that massive 32mm, 28mm gaming was not my shtick anymore. I love skirmish games because I can paint up a monster, a cyclops, or a warband, 10 miniatures or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be in the position where I'm working for my gaming table.
Yeah.
And so I think that's for me, that's really important not to have that space not interrupted by that. And so there's two things that I wouldn't do. And that's great that you do. Don't get me wrong. Because somebody's got to do that. And I think it's a cool niche to have. Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing that exists, because there's a lot of people that are time is more valuable than their money. And it's a great way for them to get an army and something for the table. Yeah. So don't get me wrong. I think it's amazing. I have lots of friends that do that. I just, for me, I think it was a mistake when I started to gear up my painting, because for me, it is a place of calm. And I do have the desire to finish miniatures. I do have the desire to, okay, just, you know, one more layer and I'm that much closer to finished, but it's not a race anymore. And it's not it's not a place where I'm like, okay, I need to get this done.
Feel under pressure kind of thing to do something, to finish something, sure. in order to get it on the table to play it, kind of thing. Yeah.
And if I do that, I try to do it at a smaller scale. Like Adepticon, when I go to Adepticon, traditionally on Thursday nights, we have this kind of escape from Adepticon. We go to a different hotel out for dinner. And then that hotel, we play Frostgrave. So we're going to play Stargrave. So I will have to paint up basically half a warband. So 5 miniatures for that. And I will feel pressure, but that's good because that pressure makes you do it. Right.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit different than doing it to make sure that you're competitive or make sure that you're making money. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where the balance is for me, is when it's okay to, I won't paint competitively anymore. And that means as a business, as a Golden Demon type of thing, or as getting it ready for the My Gaming table with my friends.
I agree with that too. I don't do Golden Demon. I did it for a while in Australia when I was there, and it's an exciting event if you go there personally and see the other entries and see and meet the other painters and that kind of thing. But in the end, it was just like, well, I painted this thing, it's in the cabinet, what's it going to do? If I can't game with it, it's just meaningless to me. It's just worthless. So I just paint to play. You know what I mean? Like, I love
that's all right. That. 100%. It becomes a paperweight, right?
Yeah, and basically. Just, yeah.
Yeah. I obviously dabbled, but it is about getting it on the table, ultimately. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it is about gaming. I'm not a competitive gamer, as you kind of reason probably, mm-hmm. but it is about getting it on the table because that's where it really comes alive. And for me, that's really the pinnacle of a wargaming experience, is when you are so into the game that it seems like it's real. Mm. It's like you're immersed. That immersive feel, that is what I love. That's why I'm a big terrain guy. You can probably see that. I mean, that's what I did over COVID, is that waterfall and all that stuff. And when it can be immersive to the extent that you kind of forget where you are, that's the best. And then that's why I consider myself, my main gaming is wargaming, but I actually consider myself a role player. I don't consider myself a wargamer in a lot of ways, because really it's about that immersive experience, that world building, that adventure. One more adventure, and that's really what it comes down to. You know, it's not about how am I going to win. And everybody likes to win. You know, everybody likes when the dice gods give you some sixes or twenties or whatever. But that feeling of being immersed, that's way more important to me than anything else. When the adventure happens. And again, that relates back to Geek Nation Tours, is that really I'm trying to create adventures. Mm. And going to a place is not good enough for me. Bringing people to a place is not good enough. It's about the adventure of being in that place. Like when I go to Japan, I really try to make it feel like you're going back in time. So I do to go to Buddhist temples. I do go to Shinto shrines. I go to battlefields. We walk the battlefield when it's there. And we talk about the history and just try to immerse yourself in there. And same with my Star Trek tours. So all those tours are about being immersed. And So I'm a role player, honestly. Yeah. Mm. But I express it through miniature war game.
Well, wonderful. Yeah. I suppose a lot of these modern games, like you're talking about, what's it called again? You talked about it before. The Wizard game. Frostgrave. Thank you. Yeah. And Stargrave. You know, they're kind of immersive, you know, small scale skirmish, more role playing on the tabletop type games, more so than competitive, you know, head to head type games, which I don't feel all that, you know, apart from Epic. I suppose Epic Space Marine is the only game where I can enjoy the head-to-head kind of feel of the game, because it feels like I'm really playing a real strategy game.
Right, right.
Probably less laughs, but I'm really enjoying it.
It's
an experience. And I feel like I'm really in control of this massive army with this huge titan. And then you can laugh about when you roll in the charts and you blow them up and, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The warp missile worked.
And,
for sure. For my regular games, like outside of Epic, which are Legions now, or that I will get back into, and it will be, it will still have storylines probably. I'm quite certain of it. But my rules now, because there's so much out there, so many amazing games, amazing miniatures, that I've put rules on what I can buy. So for me, it's got to be a skirmish game. There's got to be an RPG element. So there's got to be growth. A means to grow, so a campaign system is even better. And I will miss that when we're playing Legions, but we'll come back to Ghost Archipelago and Frostgrave, the Frostgraves, continue our campaigns on those too. But really, it's that campaign, that growth, the character growth. That I really do like, and I think that we'll find a way to do it, to put it into Legions too. So that's and I do prefer D20s. I love the swinginess. Not everybody, a lot of people, there's a lot of hate for D20s, but I do love the swinginess. So that's where my passion is now. It is changing though, because I'm really I'm really excited about Legions, but. That whole vibe is how I kind of determine whether or not I'm going to buy a game. And I don't know if you noticed this, but we did go to when there was no war. We went to Estonia and did a Frostgrave tour in Estonia, and it was amazing. The food was spectacular. Booze was good. And we gamed every night in Frostgrave. And basically,
Joe McCullough, he actually got the idea from Estonia. He went to Estonia on his honeymoon, right? Or something like that.
That's right.
Freezing himself to death, and that's where he got the idea for Frostgrave.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so that's cool about that is that we went back there, and we went in winter. And so I would go back in a minute. And I don't think that there's much to worry about war-wise. That culture, it's an amazing cultural center, Estonia, and the food has tastes like curry, but then you got pork chops, and it's just such a collage of coolness, and the history there is amazing. And then we were gaming every night of Frostgrave, so that was a lot of fun too. So
yeah, nice, mate. Sounds wonderful. Yeah,
very, 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 very cool. So are you still playing Epic then? Or
absolutely, absolutely.
Really, that's so awesome. I love that. That's so cool. Or what are you? Are you playing Net Epic, or what are you?
Playing second edition. So the thing was, like, I played Epic with a friend of mine, Chris, and we played it in '90s when Epic Space Marine first came out, the second edition set, and we bought that and we split the forces. I took the Marines and he took the Elder and Orcs. And then we slowly built up a collections. Chris actually had a wonderful kind of homemade molding kit. He made his own molds, and he would buy the vehicles and he would cast them up so he'd have more molds.
That's awesome. Yeah, more. Because you were always wondering where you could get more. So that's awesome.
Because he was newly married and he had a young child at that time. So he didn't have the money to splash out all the metal stuff. And of course, we're in Australia. So it's like we're living in the most gaming related centric place in the world, so getting stuff was really difficult. But we managed. We got our box sets of the rule sets. I played mainly Chaos. He played mainly Orcs and Eldar, and we just loved it. We went there every. I went to his house every weekend on his floor because we didn't have tables. We just played on the floor. We were young enough then. I was like 19 or something like that, and he was fairly young too. So we could sit on the floor or kneel on the floor for like 3 or 4 hours at a time.
You can't do that now. It would kill you.
That's playing awesome. Hushed tones because his wife and baby were sleeping, and I fondly remember those times. It was all brilliant. And we went to the games club, and we put on big games of Epic and got other people involved, and yeah, that were the best times of gaming for me. So about 5 years ago, and because I played Infinity heavily for like 10 years, about a decade or so, but the rules became so complex that it just became this brain burning kind of experience every time I went to play Infinity. That it's like, my God, how many rules I got to remember? And, you know, and I thought, I can't deal with this anymore. So I thought, I want to go back. I want to go back to the gaming, the games that I really loved back in the day. And Epic Space Marine was the first thing that I really wanted to start up. So I posted up online here in Japan. A guy very kindly posted back saying, yeah, I've got some squats and orcs. And, you know, he showed me some pictures. And I thought, they're perfect. I'll take those. And he had the Warlord set and everything and all the cards, and that was how I got started back into it. I found another guy here in Chiba in Japan who also liked to play Space Marine, so I started playing with him. And then Paul, the guy I game with now, he was always interested in Epic but never got to play it because it sort of phased out by the time he got into war gaming or whatever. So he got into it. He really likes it because he comes from the Flames of War background, so he same sort of scale, similar kind of rules. But that's how we play. And we play well. I would love to play once a month if we can. I record the battles and put them on my YouTube channel. So trying to keep
Sorry about that. My ignorance is showing.
That's all right. That's all right. But yeah, I try to keep it alive. Because I really love that game so much. I think it's probably my favorite all-time game. I love Warhammer. I love. You know, those old models and painting them are beautiful. And painting Epic is not one of my greatest loves, I've got to be honest.
It's a slog.
But the game itself is what really keeps you coming back.
It's, again, like I said, the system. I still have all my miniatures, by the way.
Oh, great, Terrace, great.
I have got Space Marine Army. I've got my friends' stuff too. So I've got two Space Marine armies, Orc Army. The start of a Nid army. Some of it's still in metal, still never painted, because that's when we kind of stopped. And Eldar army. What else? And there's a squad army there too. Yeah, I've got all that stuff still. As a matter of fact, if 2 days ago I could have pulled that out and showed you, but
that's all right, man.
Trying to organize my room, but so I have all that stuff. So. The sense of nostalgia. That's awesome that you're still playing. That's amazing. Because it is a good game. Like all the really kind of weird, wacky shit that happens all the time. Like the Eldar.
Those weird, wacky templates.
Template. That's just so good stuff, man. And that's awesome that you're still playing. That's great. Commendable. And that you found miniatures in Japan?
Well, I found people who were selling miniatures. So I found a guy, Bruce, somewhere in Japan here, maybe somewhere in Kanto or something, I think. And he had just a load of old stuff. He's from Canada as well, actually. He migrated to Japan many, many years ago and lives here. But I think he just brought his stuff that he had in Canada to Japan and probably just never got to play it or whatever. I'm not sure, but he had that plus Man of War, and I bought Man of War off him at a very reasonable price, and all my Skaven army for Warhammer Fantasy I bought from Bruce as well. So Bruce has been a wonderful, very, very generous person in allowing me to get all these wonderful miniatures and games and stuff at very reasonable prices. So big shout out to Bruce. Yay, Bruce. And yeah, basically got me my foothold into Epic again. And then from there, I started buying stuff online, of course, through Facebook groups and making connections with people in the UK and that kind of thing, and just getting stuff again and slowly but surely accruing all the stuff I'd lost and given away or thrown in the bin. I threw some stuff in the bin, actually, would you believe? I just threw it out because I just didn't think we'll ever play it again. It's crazy. Absolutely craziness. And just slowly building up my collection again to a point where I've got pretty much everything I need, and I'm happy, man. I'm happy. I don't need anything else. I'm all good.
So will you try Legions, or you're like, that the price point is too much? I'll probably just stick
with
you've got everything that you need already.
I think I've got everything I need. I think if I'm ever going to expand off Epic Space Marine, would be NetEpic. I'd like to try that. I've never played it. Yep. And other game. Yeah, I think I've heard a lot of good things about it. And I think most people who play Epic Space Marine always go to Net as a default now. They go to NetEpic now. And I would like to give it a go because it's very similar to Epic Space Marine, but it has some elements of Space Marine First Edition in there with some of the movement, alternating movement, that kind of thing. Yep. And it was Peter Ramos and I think another general from
Peter,
who made, is it Imperial Dominatus or something like that? There's like a D10 system that he made based on Horus Heresy, and he's got his own game that they've developed together. And I really want to try that because it's basically just like First Edition Epic, but with a D10 system, not a D6 system. And that looks very interesting. Yeah. So
D10s are great too. I think that adding a little bit of swing is always awesome. So that's great. That's incredible that you're still playing. I think that you're playing again. Yeah, and those miniatures are great. They are a little bit of a slog, but I think that they're. I mean, yeah, I was converting mine by the end anyway. Like I had a Sons of Horus Imperator Titan. I drilled into my rhinos and made them with cables and stuff. It made them in all nurgly, with the sand on them and everything like that. So I was really even at that scale, I was already converting a lot. And there's a lot there. That game had so much going for it that not miniature wise, the infantry was hard because that's six, isn't it? It's 6 millimeters.
Six more, yeah, yeah.
So that's 6 millimeters tough, especially when you're getting old. 6 millimeters.
Yeah.
So do you
these, mate? These magnifying glass. I need.
To oh yeah, this. Exactly.
I can't see that stuff anymore. But the thing is, I'll say in benefit of playing Epic, one is that you can paint an entire army in a weekend.
Yes.
Especially with contrast paints, I think they're beautiful for that. Yeah. And secondly, like you said, with your friends, you know, traveling and playing abroad, I could take my Epic army in a small case. It doesn't weigh anything, as most of it's plastic. Yeah. And I could go anywhere and play it. If I was going to go to Bring Out Your Lead in the UK, I'd take Epic because it's just so easy to carry around. It's
100%.
You know, you can have a wonderful, you know, really fulfilling game playing Epic. And overall, I just feel, and I think you touched on it before, the balance issue. I don't feel there's any imbalance in the game. I think that you're always in it. And that's the thing about Epic. You can see how the victory points are going, how much you need to get, how much you need to do to break someone's company or clan or whatever. You might just be able to catch, you know, get it and snag the victory in the last minute kind of thing. I love that kind of that tension that builds in the game as well. So
for sure.
Yeah.
It's an amazing system, and there's a lot of love there. And you know, it's funny because when I was moved to Vancouver, I was looking for work, but I also brought my orcs, my unpainted orcs. So I remember probably not looking for a job as well as I should have, but I was painting orcs instead of going to look for a job. So the orcs saved me from one pain but caused another pain. So when I was done, I'm like, I can't even take these orcs anymore. I'm gonna look for a job.
Yeah,
those are great. You know, it's also about Epic. It had a certain joy about it. I think that it feels less grim dark.
Yes, you know, it does.
It does. I mean, you have elements of that, of course, but it has less of a grim dark feel. And I mean, all Rogue Trader and all those other older 90s games did have a lot less darkness, a lot more fun. And I get the reasons why GW went that way, because I think our society kind of went that way. But But Epic still has that joy too, that kind of funness about it, that that ability to just kind of make silly mistakes or silly, and it all comes out okay. And templates and blowing up stuff, and the orc rules are amazing too. It's just so silliness. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I was always an Eldar fan. I've always been, whenever I miniature wargaming armies, I always like speed. So anything with speed is always awesome. So lots of jet bikes racing across. You know,
yeah.
What's great about that scale? That scale, what's great about that scale? It's such a weird thing because a base is a base is a base, right? So if you were just moving bases and playing 40K, you can do that. Like if it was just base. And you can just move bases if it was just Epic. But Epic had this feel of these grand sweeping motions and this, you know, things you can outflank people or you can do speed. And obviously you can do that at 32 also. But it just feels so much more grand when you do it in Epic for some reason, because maybe it's because you're looking at this tiny little miniature and racing across what is a huge battlefield. But you have this feel of a bigger battle, even though it's, in a lot of ways, it's the same battle because a base is about the same size. You know what I mean? So that illusion, again, that immersive means to get people to see the battle as a huge thing is an amazing thing that wargaming can do.
Yep, absolutely, mate. I totally agree with that. I think, the movement element of Epic, these big sweeping movements, as you say, it feels like you're really actually flanking the army when you're bringing your jet bikes in or orc, cold of speed or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I played, because we play second edition 40K 2 here as well, right. It just takes like four turns before you get to the center of the table, unless you've got like a big or something.
Slogging it across, right? You're like, but it's so weird though, because they're the same size. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. It's just the way, it's a cool, well, obviously the rules are different, but, the movement's slightly different. But yeah, that whole moving and the battlefield becoming alive with motion is a really cool thing that Epic definitely captured and is a huge component of why I loved it so much. I remember once when my friend, he was running an Imperial force and I was playing an Eldar force. And I had a Warlock Titan. Warlock Titan? No.
Yeah, Warlock Titan, yeah.
Yeah, Warlock Titan.
Yeah, Phantom or Warlocks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. I just want to make sure I got the term right. He was like, how am I going to kill this guy? And he made this huge Titan, Imperial Titan, and he, gussied it out and made it so many different things. And somehow in his build, he had forgotten that the Warlock just comes up and shoots him through this, we use the psychic cannon and goes through all the void shields and everything. And I just like moved up and he's like, I spent the whole weekend making this Titan and you just killed it on the first turn. What, how can you forget the most important thing about this particular Titan?
That's the thing there too. It's like the Titan versus Titan battle was like a mini game in itself, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like the infantry wouldn't worry about the Titans. It'll be like just moving to get away from them. The vehicles came, they try to shut down some of their void shields, but then it's just like became this epic thing between the Titans, dominating like two big giant monsters or whatever,
Kaiju.
Kaiju, like Godzillas or something like that. Yeah. It's just not the same without the Titans. It's not the same without it.
No, I'd agree. I'd agree that the Titans make the game. I mean, you can play it the other way, but I think the Titans make it at a level of interest that you can't take away from. That's best included, I guess.
Really
missed. And that building them, both via rules and of course modeling, was a joy. Like, I come back to the warp missile thing. Like, is it gonna work, man? Because it's so goofy and swingy. You have no idea that thing's gonna go through. But then when it does, it's just so triumphant. I remember having so many times, like, you know, just screaming, "Yay!" with the Echo, just because it's fun, man. And that's the, like I said, there's just this more comedic element to Epic that is a thing of joy, because it's not so grim and it's not so dark, you know. Yeah. And the rules have that. The rules play that sensibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Terrace, it's been an absolute joy to have you on the podcast, man. And I really appreciate all the time that you've come on to talk to us about Geek Nation Tours, your history in the gaming, talking about Robin Williams, your account with Robin Williams and some Dunstan in the Games Workshop store in Canada. That's quite incredible. And, of course, your love and passion for wargaming generally, but of course, Epic Space Marine. And what was your craft, by the way, of your Elder? What did you paint them as? Can you remember? Is it Ulthwer or Alatok or... Is it Iltan?
One with the cup. The one with the cup. The kind of the Y symbol.
Ah.
Iandin?
Iandin. That's right. Okay, very nice. All right. So I hope you get your Iandin back on the table.
Yeah, one day. Yeah, I will. Maybe now you got me all riled up. Maybe I'll be like, screw this, Legions.
But I'm going to hold you to that, mate. If you're coming over to Japan, please come and see me at the Corona Command.
Oh, you know what? I mean, now maybe I will. Maybe I'll have to go.
We'll play Epic Space Marine over a couple of Nihon shoes. Yeah?
That would be awesome. Awesome. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. And thanks for all the memories, because you really brought back a whole bunch of memories for me.
Oh, that's wonderful, Terrence. I'm really happy about that, man. Enjoy your new game when it comes and gets delivered eventually, and you know, you can enjoy putting all those miniatures together.
I feel so good. No warlords.
Everybody, take care and enjoy the rest of your day or evening, and I'll talk to you again hopefully at some other point. Okay, so thanks very much again. Thanks, Terrace. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.